When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Peacock streaming. The biggest sports and live events on the planet.
Touchdown.
From Super Bowl 56.
What a game this is.
To complete coverage of the Winter Olympics. Streaming every event, every day.
Yes!
It's all the unprecedented.
United States wins gold.
Unstoppable.
Sensational.
Unbelievable. Sports to love. Sign up now at peacocktv.com.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good morning and welcome to a slightly late edition of the Arsenal podcast, the Arsenal Opinion podcast, might I say. I am here with Matt.
Hi, Pete.
And I'm here with a long lost brother. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Curtis. And hello to Matt and you lovely Pete. It's
so good to have you back.
I'm so glad to be back, man.
There was a moment where I was like, does he want to be here anymore?
Oh, I have so much love for this.
Oh, that's so good. So yeah. we've got Curtis and Matt back, and we're here to talk about something exciting, and that's a victory. Second on the bounce.
First away of the season.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about
second of the year.
We're gonna talk about fucking Granit Xhaka.
Fucking.
We're going to talk about Emery and his selection woes, and we're going to talk about some of the positives that we found from the game. So why don't we start with the positives? Arsenal won against Cardiff. It was our second away win of the year, which is excellent. It felt amazing. Like top line thoughts on the game, guys. What do you think?
Well, I think absolutely delighted with the win because we've set ourselves that target of 8 wins out of 8 after the opening 2 games. Mm. And we're now 2 wins into that. We are a quarter of the way. And we go into the international break with a lot of confidence. And we can say whatever we want, you know, it's Cardiff, they're shit, all that stuff. But the reality is, when you've won as few games as we have away from home, it's a significant achievement. And I think when you had the Arsenal fans singing, we're winning away, how shit must you be, we're winning away, it's a sign of actually there is a frailty and confidence around playing away, and we've managed to quickly get a result on the board.
Curtis, how did you feel?
I have my agreements and my disagreements. I think that going into this one, I was actually a bit suspect because we might have teams like Stoke City away, gone now. But I actually felt like Cardiff City, like we know that their away, like we know that their home sport is actually quite intimidating for whether you are an away supporter there or you're the actual team. I felt like it was going to be a tough one because we hadn't played them in the recent. So I felt like that was going to be one. But at the same time, I feel like we're hopefully this is me being the optimist, but like I feel like we're starting to develop on a little bit of confidence, and this plan that we have in place, it's going to take some time, but I think that there's positive and negatives to be taken away from that match, but I was happy as pie.
I've got to say, Curtis, I had the same worries that you did. Yeah. We don't like going away to Wales. I had those nightmares.
We don't like going away.
Yeah. I mean,
like staying at home.
But going to Wales since we won all of those FA Cups in Cardiff back in the day, has always felt like a bit of a worry.
Swansea was always...
Swansea was always a tough one.
Really difficult, wasn't it? It was a really difficult game. Yeah. So, and
it's a different country, you know?
And when you saw that shit fucking thug defender Morrison dominating us from early on, and Neil Warnock's like puffy face, just thought I thought that there could be some problems on the cards. And we've got to be honest, guys, that wasn't a walk in the park. That was a really, really tough game.
I watched the first 2 or 3 minutes and immediately thought they're a lot more up for it than we are.
Yeah. Well, and they looked that way to begin.
They were so much, and you looked at it and you thought, and I think that's the beauty of having a new coach in charge, because they know that they've got to just sort it out when it's like that.
And it's on them now.
And I think they managed to put the required effort in to show that they weren't going to be bullied.
My first thoughts about the defence, because for me the story of the day outside the victory was our shambolic defence is if Petr Cech didn't need to play out of the back, do you think that would have settled the nerves of the defence? Do you think he almost lights the fuse of like the frayed nerves? Like he made a couple of shaky passes and then he tried to play through Harry Arter. Do you think that sort of set the tone early on?
First of all, I just want to say, I think the defense is getting worse.
I think so as well, yeah.
So I was expecting to see a fairly considerable improvement even in the first game of the season. Now, the first game was difficult to tell because it was Man City. But I was expecting us to look much more solid in every game to begin with than we are. And I expected to see some sort of improvement as the games went on. And instead, there seems to be much more focus on playing out from the back than there is on being solid at the back. And that's the bit that sort of surprises me, because it feels like you have to start by being solid and then you start playing out from the back, rather than you start doing the harder thing, even at the expense of becoming even more fragile.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about, you take somebody like Cech, and you've seen Cech with, I'm not going to say we've seen that at Arsenal, but you've seen him with a solid defense in front of him for some other random club that he's ever played for. But, and he is very much a... He just seems a much different player when to be honest with you, any keeper is going to have that same confidence that, like, when you've got three or four guys in front of you that you know that can sort it, and you're definitely seeing a different side of Cech. And I don't think that's just his age and where he is now in his career. Like, you know, some could say he's in his 36th, twilight of his career.
Yeah, definitely in the twilight.
But he is. But I don't think that what you are seeing right now is a reaction of his twilight. I think that it is literally down to, if he had four solid defenders in front of him that knew what, like, collectively what they were doing together, I think he'd be a much different.
But we sat here last week saying Petr Cech's having a great start to the season. I think, I think he from a goalkeeping perspective, in terms of shot stopping, he's been outstanding.
Well, he's doing his job.
I think Curtis is right. Our defense weren't helping him. No. Were they? You've got a player, you've got a goalkeeper who isn't particularly comfortable with balls at the back, and Socrates is playing him in when he's got defenders running at him.
Yeah.
But to be fair to Cech, Liverpool spent, 70 million euro on Alisson, and he made a fucking horrendous mistake, and he's looked awful at the back. And I'm pretty sure that when he was in Brazil, he went from being a midfielder to becoming a goalkeeper.
Did he?
So yeah, to see Liverpool's goalkeeper like struggling in the same
way.
They
just have a slightly better defense, don't they?
They have, they've got a better defense. But I think I'm trying to
imagine if Wenger converted someone to be goalkeeper.
I'm surprised that we said that last year. One of the few things that Wenger didn't try was taking a regista and turning him into a keeper. But I wonder if Emery's trying to teach his students like rocket science before he's given them like a foundation in the absolute basics, and they just can't. There's too many things to compute.
I like what you're saying, because like there's this thing that, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that's doing it, that, you know, for how many years present company included and excluded, we said, oh, we need something different, blah, blah, blah. And so like, there's this part of me that like, I'm like, okay, I want to watch this and I want to see it work because I'm optimistic and I'm always optimistic, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm waiting to see, and it's interesting because you can't see the formation happening yet. Like I don't see what Emery's doing in the collective, like as I'm not necessarily seeing the drastic differences in how the team's playing. You're seeing the slight nuances in the difference in the team's playing, but you're not necessarily seeing it. And I'm watching for those things that what you've just said is like, okay, where is this coming out and is it working or isn't it working?
Yeah, trying to identify what the style is, because I'd agree with you, because I was looking at the formation at the weekend.
I don't see the style at all yet.
I don't know what the fuck's going on. Ozil's drifting in, yeah. Ramsey's playing up front at times. It doesn't feel like there's a clear identity coming through, but not that anybody is expecting that to come through. But
I think
where I'm with Matt is that I would love to see just some of the basics being addressed. It's nice that you're playing out of the back, but I kind of feel like playing out of the back is a little bit of a luxury when you've got problems like you don't know what your centre midfield looks like, you don't know who your starting strikers are, and your defenders don't know how to...
Yeah.
Like, they were getting in behind us, they were getting in from crosses, like, all over the place. Like,
if you're playing out of the back because you're a brick wall and nothing comes bashing, you're like, bosh. Here we go. We're going to bring this forward again. Well, maybe that's different.
You know, maybe it's a bit like when you're a kid and you have to and you learn French, and it would actually be more helpful to be taught the language by
in the basics.
Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes you just got a teacher who just insists on talking French all fucking lesson, and you don't have any idea what they're talking about. But the idea being, eventually you'll absorb it, and through osmosis, you're going to be a better French speaker. Maybe Emery's just the same. He's just going, you know what? I'm not going to dilute my philosophy one bit. I'm going to give you a full blast, Emery. You're going to pick it up. It's going to be a bit painful on the way, but this is going to be the fastest way. It's the equivalent of throwing a small child into a swimming pool and waiting for them to swim.
And it's interesting.
Yeah. And maybe some of them will drown.
Well, it's interesting because he doesn't come off that way as a manager, but at the same time, like, I feel like it would be a really great way. Like if you're a new manager, when you've come into a club like Arsenal that have had the same thing for forever, 22 years, right?
Yeah.
It seems like that's the way to go into it. But he also doesn't wear the personality that he's that guy. But at the same time, in order to be successful, I kind of feel like you have to be that way, don't you? You have to be like, fuck. I just want to point this out because you guys have both said it. I want to say the F word. Fuck you, you learn this.
Yeah. I think I can see both sides to the story. Like, you can either be a manager who builds the blocks and takes the baby steps, but I wonder whether he's been told, look, top four this year is the minimum requirement, and
there's no time for baby steps in the Premier League anymore.
Yeah, if the fans aren't on side after 3 months, they will never be on side. Yeah.
I mean,
if by December the whole stadium's not singing his name, we're fucked.
Yeah,
but you look at twice. But you look at someone like Klopp, and you go, Klopp didn't really address the defense, really address it until January of this year.
Van Dijk,
with Van Dijk, and then he's put Alisson in, and he put Keita in. But you know, he waited because he was just like, let's get the front end going, and figure it out from there. And I have to say, some of the interplay in all of the games, apart from probably the City game, between midfield and attack has been, some of it's been fantastic.
It's been interesting,
moments for sure.
I felt the same, like, for all the negatives that can be said about the Chelsea match, I felt like there were so many positives to be taken away from that match as well as there was positives. And I definitely saw all those things that I'm guessing that you're referring to as well.
And I think, moving this subject on to where you guys are going, one of the positives that we've had through most of the games is Lacazette comes on and makes things more interesting. So
please let's talk about Lacazette, because it's been a while since I've been on this podcast.
Very true. I know that, like, I haven't been his biggest fan, but it's undeniable that when he starts with Aubameyang, things get interesting. I think Steve Bould said last year that Lacazette can almost operate as a number 10 at times. And like, he's a hustler.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it fantastic to see, firstly, two of our strikers score two really important goals. Like Aubameyang's goal was wonderful, and like the link-up play between Ozil, Lacazette, and Aubameyang was exceptional. But their love for each other,
the synchronicity,
but the little handshake that they had, like it was beautiful to see, like some real charisma in that front line.
There's
but
a partnership that has been brewing since the end of Wenger. And it was an interesting thing that when we originally brought on Aubameyang, that I'm sure everyone was just like, you know, what's going to happen with this? And I think that there's a really beautiful humility that comes from Aubameyang that and I'd like to compare him to a number of other players, but I'll let you guys do it. But like, there's a beautiful humility to Aubameyang that like, there's a number of situations that he finds him in that he knows he could take that and he could smash it. Mm-hmm. But I think that he knows that from a team perspective, that it'd be like maybe one, it's easier, and maybe two, it's going to look so much cooler when we partner and make this happen as a team, as opposed to just being like an Ian Wright. Like Ian Wright would always take it by himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you almost feel like they're trying to make each other look good so they can play together.
No, I don't know that necessarily they both are, but I think that Aubameyang is doing a really good job of saying like, listen, I'm here to be in the team. I'm like, he wasn't trying to take something away from Lacazette. And I think that maybe he saw something in Lacazette that loads of us fans didn't, or maybe someone like I did.
Yeah, you're definitely a fan. So what do we like? But how do we feel about putting £60 million worth of talent on the wing? Like it's somewhere. I mean, it's kind of the tactic that we've lambasted Wenger for 4 years.
Yeah, it depends on how it works out. You know?
I think that ever since he arrived, Aubameyang has been championing Lacazette. Like right from day one, he almost from his first day, he was saying we should play together. Every time they've come on, they've made an impact.
They have done.
They seem to like playing together. It's lethal. It may not be as balanced on paper, but for some reason it works, whether it's the chemistry between them or not. I also wonder whether Aubameyang actually knows himself as a player and knows he needs someone. Because sometimes Aubameyang can be, his goal record is always stands up to scrutiny, but sometimes his all-round play lacks a bit.
Yeah. Sometimes you miss Giroud.
And I think
sometimes you need a Lacazette to do that.
And I think that him and Lacazette can be, you know, a great offering. And I think even Emery has clearly not been convinced about playing them together because this was the first game he started them together. But, you know, now's the chance. I think they could get a run of games now. Yeah. And if they go on a little spree where they both get three or four goals in the next three or four games, then it could be a bit of a maybe like a Dwight York and Andy Cole sort of scenario where you have the
I was going to say, I wasn't sure how far you were going to go with that, but I was almost going to say that, but Dennis, I was kind of holding myself back.
Dennis Thierry, we cannot.
Andy Cole
pickpocketing in the changing rooms, allegedly.
But I do, you know, I feel like you saw the drizzle of that, the sprinkles of that last season occasionally when they would pair up. And it was the thing that, like, the reason that I defended Lacazette when you were like, why would you do that? Because you saw that
je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi of what could be. And you know, as a person that like, I constantly feel like in my career, like when I work with the right people, I'm a star. When I work with the wrong people, I am the fucking janitor. I think that like I saw that in Lacazette, and it's like, I'm pretty sure he is solid, but he needs the right people to link with.
Is he the janitor or is he the genius?
He's not the janitor yet. I don't think he's not the janitor. He's not gone to the janitor stage yet, but he's also not gone to the genius stage. I think that I feel like Aubameyang might be the key to the janitor lounge.
Somebody, I did read a very funny tweet that someone wrote after the game, and they were like, absolute props to Peter Cech, because without Peter Cech in training every day, there's no way Lacazette would have aimed that shot at the near post. I was like, that's good. That's gold.
That's quite
that's
good.
Swear gold. So, moving on to the next subject. We're at a good pace today, guys. We're at a good pace. We're getting through this.
It's the mezcal.
Well, this is my new scapegoat, the new victim of my
Who is it?
It's Granit Xhaka. Okay. It's Granit fucking Xhaka. But we're here again.
It's not new.
It's not new. But let me tell you, somebody sent me a tweet yesterday, and it kind of riled me up. It's from Oh the Crab. And this guy basically wrote, it takes real intelligence to see what Granit Xhaka offers the team. And, you know, there's always a player the Arsenal fans get behind who's a little bit shit because people want to come across as intellectual. I think that comes from the Arsene era when Arsene would identify a player that the fans didn't understand, and then all of a sudden you've got Gilberto, the invisible wall. He's not there and we're leaking goals. So I think that there's still a bit of hangover. Someone pointed out to me the other week that Granit Xhaka is the new Wenger. It's exactly the same people defending him that were defending Wenger up until February. But I'll put that aside because the Crab has come up with quite a good argument about Granit Xhaka. He's pulled some stats. 17, the final third entries for Granit Xhaka led... I don't understand that stat. He made 85 passes, 6 long-range passes out of 7 attempted, 5 passes into the box completed, 110 touches, which was 15.6% of all of Arsenal's touches. He made 3 key passes. He got 1 assist from a corner. He got 0.5x assists. This is when I fucking get lost. And basically, he had a great game from a statistics perspective. So you have to say that there are some good aspects to the game, but much like the argument that we had about Mesut Ozil last year, like, this isn't NFL. You can't be great at one thing and then bad at a whole bunch of other things. So my thing is, my annoyance comes from isolated statistics, like where you don't look at the whole picture, and Twitter does this a lot. And I think there's a statistic called XG buildup, which is basically a player that starts the build-up play. Mm. And Granit Xhaka scores like very high for that because he sits at the base of a midfield. Like, he's a good passer. And we're a possession-based team. And I think people are getting too wrapped up in this stat, because if you actually look at the weaknesses Granit Xhaka has, firstly, since Granit Xhaka has been in our starting 11, we've gone from a Champions League team that got absolutely spanked by Bayern Munich 10-2. He got booked in both legs, by the way. Mm. We're now a regular in the Europa League. We've gone back to that team that gets bullied by shit teams. Like, he's weak. Like, teams can press him and he gets rattled and he makes stupid mistakes. And once again, we're looking at these statistics that say how great he is. But at the heart of it, he gave the ball away in, what, the 46th or 47th minute? Under no pressure at all, he tried to play a 20-yard pass. It failed and Cardiff scored. And then in the last 10 minutes, I don't know what happened to him. Did you see the epileptic fit moment that he had where he kind of and then he gave away a foul on the edge of the box? So that is my case against these isolated stats, because they don't tell the story of a player who is consistently given the ball away in dangerous positions in almost every game of this season, and he did it all of last season. Guys, tell me I'm wrong.
So I won't tell you wrong, and I won't tell you you're right either.
Hey, we don't do fence sitting on the Arsenal opinion.
But I will say this. So, for instance, let's go back a week. No one was going to tell you that Granit Xhaka was fantastic against West Ham. And I actually think that he was. I think he was fantastic against West Ham. And I know that it's not a popular opinion. It's probably not a popular Arsenal opinion. What? You see what I did there? But here's what I say. I agree with you 110% on your stats thing, because you can take a stat, on an individual match and you can look at that and you can say, okay, fair play. When you look at a stat across the entire season, I think it's a bit more gray and muddy and things like that. But I think that we can look at historically, and I don't think that Granit Xhaka is to blame the fact that we're a fucking shit Europa League team now. But I think that I recall when we shit the bed against Birmingham City in a cup final with a fantastic defender known as Laurent Koscielny. Laurent Koscielny bore the brunt of that loss.
But we can't. If you recall,
Laurent Koscielny in the face.
Laurent Koscielny has a reputation that outweighs the massive mistakes that he consistently makes in big games.
But you can take some of our best defenses historically throughout the last 20 or 30 years that we would regard as, any Arsenal fan would regard as, some of our best defenses, and say, you remember that time that he did this or he did that. Because we're not wearing it closely, we forget, like, oh, do you remember that time that, you know what I mean?
But I don't think
I'm not defending Jacques. He makes some nasty mistakes.
Yeah, this isn't a David Seaman getting lob from the halfway line. Right. This is consistently in every game he does something where he gives the ball away that either leads to a key opportunity for the opposition or just an outright goal.
So he's a polarizing player that, like, he, because I'll say this, he does some things in games that are incredibly important from a defensive level, but then, yeah, absolutely right. He does things that are shocking that you're like, fuck, substitute him now.
Have you ever seen an Arsenal midfielder that important to the team that makes that many dopey mistakes?
No.
Like, I don't, I, like, even Danielson.
There I agree with.
No, yeah, come even, on, don't even, put him in Danielson. Like, I think Danielson was a better player.
I completely disagree.
He was bland, don't get me wrong, but the same sort of player.
I completely disagree with that because Danielson, I don't feel like Danielson was ever a
forward. Danielson didn't give a flying fuck about anything.
And he was never a forward moving player. Like, this is where I'm saying, like, and I get that it seems like a fence rider, like, he does these things that are completely progressive actions, and then he does these things that are completely, like, regressive. Completely regressive. But maybe it's just the optimist in me that I take, like, when he does good, like, it looks really good. But you're absolutely right. He completely shits the bed on a lot of cases.
The biggest
as well.
Issue that's hurt Granit Xhaka is he came in for 35 million. Yeah. And the reality is he's come in to a very average Arsenal team.
Yeah.
He is probably the best of a bad bunch, and he's been forced to play pretty much every game. And if he was an 8 million, 9 million player, we'd be like, you know, whatever. It's just that we've spent 35 million on him and have heard all this stuff about him. So he's an okay player. The reality is he's going to get phased out. I'm pretty sure of it. We've got Torreira waiting to come in. Torreira's going to be the first name on the team sheet in that central midfield role. And then I think, you know, Guendouzi and Xhaka are going to battle it out. And right now, Guendouzi looks like more mobile, just as good at passing, more tenacious, more up for it.
But do you think Emery is going to go with a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old consistently? Do you think that that's going to be his...
It's tough to say because I would say this, I like Guendouzi a lot, and you can say, yeah, younger player, but, like, he's made some really diabolical mistakes as well.
It's the same thing, but at least he's got, you know, he's
a few years younger.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got a cool haircut.
He's got a cool haircut. He's bringing the party with a haircut. So Matt, you said the other week that you thought the reason that Xhaka persists in the side is because you can't have two players young, new to the Premiership as well, playing in a centre midfield.
Well, not when you've got a new manager, right? Is that too risque?
Well,
let's face it. He is not great, but he's not terrible. He's fine. And he rarely costs us a game. He often contributes to something vaguely positive. He's absolutely fine. He's like a 10 million, is it like a 10 million pound player?
That's the warmest water I've ever felt. Like the cool slash warm water. Like what do you call that? The water, it's like the baby pool.
He's fine.
But do you think...
keep him on the bench. He can play home games. Like, for fine.
I think he's better than that.
But does this come back to the original point that we were making about the defence? Okay, like, he brings a lot to our ability to move the ball forward, but sometimes you just need fucking solidity in the base of midfield, right? So maybe we have to sacrifice.
Let me ask a question.
You need someone else more defensively there.
To mop up, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, right? This is a little game.
I like games.
Who do you prefer? Elneny or Xhaka? Just be starting.
If I'm honest, I would actually take Xhaka starting.
Yeah. Okay, Pete.
Just starting. I don't want him. I don't want him for the full 90 minutes.
Come on. Okay. Xhaka.
Now I'm going to ask another question. Do you think Elneny's a shit player?
No.
I think he's very plain.
We're both saying that Xhaka is better than an okay player like Elneny.
Yes.
And he's better than him. So he's not that fucking bad, is he?
What? I did, but who's saying that?
I wasn't. I was never saying that.
You gave me shit. Don't play that game again. All right. Okay. So
he just sopped it up with his big mop.
Yeah. So we give him. I think that moves us nicely on in into the final third. The final phase, the action.
Are we going to score a goal in this third?
I hope so. I hope so. You guys,
I feel
like you guys have been hitting the ball over the bar from 6 yards this whole pod. So
we're defending well.
Yeah. So I think almost the theme of the first four games for Emery has been selection dilemmas. He's got selection dilemmas all over the park. One of the narratives that's running on Le Grove at the moment, a guy called Cesc Appeal, who writes in the comments section, has been pushing it. But his view is that Emery is bottling making the big decisions. He's going half Emery. Like he's making like small tweaks here and there, one or two, but he's not absolutely rocking the joint. He's playing players based on reputation versus playing the players that are right for his system.
So I've got a really, really strong point of view on this. And that is, when you start the season, everyone goes, don't look at the table after four games, look at it after 10, right? And that's like a fair point, because it sort of settles down by then, and you sort of know who's going to have a good season and a bad season, and you sort of know what each team is going to be capable of. And I think the same is for the manager. He's got 10 games to figure out what the right lineup is. And actually, you know, finding a winning team from game one, it'd be nice, but it's really, really, really unlikely. So he's got 10 games to figure it out. And you know how it is. You know that even with some of Wenger's teams that have gone on to achieve things, a lot of the times he's stumbled across something. He's stumbled across Coquelin and Cazorla.
Stumbled across Flamini.
He stumbled across
Ashley Cole.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to just, and I think the same, the Aubameyang Lacazette feels something similar. Like, didn't think it was right, born out of necessity, nothing was going with all the other options he was playing, and it turns into something, you know. And I think the same is true here. And I think we'll give him 10 games. Why would he go and like make a call now on stuff that he doesn't need to? Yeah. He's got these games. Well, if we can win these 8 games or win 7 out of 8, and by the end of it we're pretty much, we've got like 9 out of 11, sort of first, you know, 9 of the 11 first team. You've got Torreira bedded in. The defense is working a bit better. Then he's done really well. And if he's kept people happy in the process, why is he gonna like isolate someone after three or four games, especially when two of them are against two of the hardest games we'll have all season?
Yeah.
So he's far more. It's going to be much more interesting to wait and see what happens over 10.
I agree, because you know, again, I said this point at the start of the pod, is that, you know, for some people, as many as 5 seasons, we need a change, we need a new manager, all these things. And in a lot of cases, you need to give a new manager with a new perspective time to figure it out. And there's some, I guarantee that if we were to talk to him at end of season, he's going to say, well, you know, I made some mistakes at the start of the season while figuring it out. But like, you have to make mistakes in order to figure it out sometimes. And you have to learn and you have to grow from it. I think that there's some really remarkable things, though. It's the one contrast to a Wenger is that Emery's not your stubborn, I'm just going to do. Like, you've seen him make these changes that, like, we as fans that have year in, year out watch the Arsenal, be like, oh, why did he do that? Because we're looking at it from this view. But he's coming in as the new manager, and he's like, I'm not going to just be stubborn for the sake of it. He feels that he needs to make a change, and in 3 months he might be like, well, I'll never do those changes again. But I feel like you have to do those things in order to see if they work.
So you think he's making, you're pleased with the changes, you like the fact that he's dropping Ozil, you like the fact that he'll pull Ramsey, you think that he's making big decisions already?
I'll say yes and no. Like, in the heat of it, absolutely not. I'm like, what the fuck was that? But like, I recognize him trying to do things that like might not be conventional, might not be comfortable because he wants to see what's going to happen. I think that the thing that's happening with him and Ozil, you've read about it in the media, like that could be something personal where just like, mate, you just need to sit out this week because this isn't happening. But I think that he's not afraid to pull a change based on like not stats, not actually the profile of the player, but like, I think that he's pulled changes that like everyone else has been upset about, but he just felt like he needed to do based on the situation.
He's definitely made bold decisions because let's face it.
Not Steve Bold.
He's not Steve Bold. He's not playing his new £20 million goalkeeper at the moment. Right. Despite the guy who's playing clearly being uncomfortable playing at the back, he's still deciding to go for that. Mm-hmm. He's not playing the defensive midfielder that we all thought was going to be the key guy, and I think will be the key guy.
I think he will as well. Yeah,
he's playing a 19-year-old who he plucked from the French second division and starting him every game in central midfield in an area. You know, those are not decisions that you know. It'd be far easier for him to have started Torreira as soon as we lost two games, going we need solidity. Leno from the start because he wants to play out from the back. You know, he's doing it his way. Yeah. And that's what gives me hope for the future.
So on the biggest issue or the biggest challenge that he's got for me is that his most expensive players cannot all play together. Like he cannot play them all together. So I'll bring Cardiff as an example. Mkhitaryan dropped. Aaron Ramsey playing at number 10. Mm. Mesut Ozil on the right. It didn't work. Realistically, it's questionable whether it's going to work moving forward. Like the squad can't deal with Mkhitaryan, Ozil, and Aaron Ramsey all playing together. Where does he go with a challenge like that? He's like 350. You can't put £350,000 a week on the bench.
Well, I hope that he's at some point in training each week. He's trying to figure that out because, like you said at the start of the podcast, like on paper. These, I mean, selectively on paper, these players together should be able to make a Man City, and I use them because it just seems like now that team is linking up, even though they're not on the top right now, like Liverpool. But those players individually and together ideally should make it happen, and I think that it will show a lot about him as a manager to make that happen because it should happen. And I hope that it will.
I think there'll be casualties.
Well, of course, you know, there always is.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the most obvious one feels like Mkhitaryan at the moment. I can't see him lasting.
Do you think? Really? I think that Mkhitaryan has to play on the right. Like Bellerin was kind of impotent considering his like electric start to the season, at least moving forward.
Boogie, woogie, woogie.
Yeah, the second half against Cardiff when Ozil started to drift in, someone was suggesting that maybe we play like a 4-2-2-2. And because that might be, it feels like it's a weird formation to talk about, but I know that they play it in a Leipzig play that formation. Like that, maybe that could accommodate the players, but you can't spend £200,000 a week on Mkhitaryan and keep him on the bench. And also, like he offers that work rate that Mesut probably isn't going to offer out on the right. Like he doesn't have the industry. I don't think.
I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole because like there's always that argument about the way that Ozil plays versus everyone else, and I think he plays smart versus hard. But I am on the Ozil camp on that. But I think that, again, we have to remember we're four games in. We're in with the new manager. And surely, yeah, some of the players came in preseason early enough because they felt compelled to do so. New manager, new et cetera, et cetera. But we're four games in, and I don't think that we're going to see the end of the season. And let's chalk it into the concrete. I don't think that we're going to face the end of the season where you're not going to see those things happening. I would be shocked if you just said, I would be absolutely shocked if what Matt said that Mkhitaryan doesn't make it. I don't think that he's going to be the casualty of this because I think he is an incredibly smart player. And I think that if the manager is in the headspace that I am holding him to already, I think that the manager knows that and he's needing to figure that out. And he's saying, okay, It's like, how do you take a bunch of really good talents and make them work really well together? And I think that's going to be the burden that the manager is going to need to overcome in the next, what, four to six matches?
The other thing which throws it all into a bit of uncertainty is he doesn't know whether he's going to lose Aaron Ramsey. He could lose Aaron Ramsey in 3 months.
I reckon he's gone in January.
So he can't burn his bridges with anyone because he may need them once Ramsey's gone or if Ramsey goes in January. And, you know, he's not going to... They'll sell him in January if...
Yeah.
If there's no clarity.
That'd be psychologically damaging like it was last season when you feel like...
Maybe. Or maybe he's... Maybe we'll actually have a plan where we'll go... You know what, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
He's still stalling. Let's go and do something. Let's go and sell him and try and bring in, you know, Lamar from Monaco or go big and go all day.
Are you comparing psychologically damning to Alexis?
Yeah.
Because I actually look at that, oddly enough, I look at that as one of, as crazy as it seems, I look at that as one of the positive things that we did, because despite everything else, I feel like when Alexis was gone, I felt like a lot of the team finally came. Like, they weren't the best team.
It was positive for one game, and then it went completely to shit, though, didn't it? Like, we didn't win an away game for the rest of
the... Because our second half of the season last year was so strong.
It was.
Yeah. That run.
But the other problem is...
I looked at it collectively, and I felt like it was a good thing. It was like trimming some really bad fat.
Here's the other worry about the Ramsey bit is...
Ramsey will be a hit.
No, the problem with the Ramsey bit is that Ivan Gazidis still hasn't decided whether he's going to stay or go. I mean, I can't believe if he's getting a stake in Milan that he's going to stay, but we're not going to... I'd be shocked if Arsenal could hire a CEO in 3 months. That's not the sort of thing that you pull out your ass, is it? I wonder how that's going to impact it. It's from the club. It irritated that Ivan hasn't made a decision yet. I mean, yeah, you would imagine that they...
But everyone else, if you're in a position of leadership, everyone else is looking at the same time. All right, like, let's have some conversations. I know this guy. You know that guy? I know that guy. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's having a conversation, whether or not... And it wouldn't be rude to even suggest that, even if Gazidis decided to stay.
I tell you what, though, it would be a telling appointment if Gazidis leaves, because I don't know whether you guys read, I think the LA Times wrote a fawning piece about Stan Kroenke. They were like, the real MVP at the LA Rams, Stan Kroenke. He's just made the most expensive contract signing for a defensive
player. That's
going
to amount to fuck all.
Well, I hope
we
so.
We know this by now.
Yeah, but I hope so. But
I think that nothing. The only thing that we should be talking about in what could be a fucking terrible season is that cunt taking over. Fucking anyway.
I got some rage. Okay,
see, I have some in me too.
Yeah,
come on.
The cursing today. Said the C word, which in America is a bad word.
Yeah, I'm just going to talk quietly now.
Right, okay, all right. Well,
that's it, isn't it?
Wait, is that it?
Let's flip it
a little bit.
Well, no, actually, do you know what? Before we...
Let's talk something good.
Before we go, I think we did this last year for Wenger, the half-term scorecard. Give us a quick synopsis of... I know that you've both spoken extensively about Emery, but like, how do you feel it's going like so far?
B.
A B?
Oof. A B. Yeah, I think he's come in. Doesn't seem to be overawed. The reality is he's got the absolute bare minimum of points.
Yeah.
In that we've got 4 out of 8 and we really needed... Or 4 out of 9. 6 out of 12.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we got 6 points out of 12 and we really needed 7.
Yeah.
We really needed to have taken a point from one of our first two. So even 2 wins, a draw, a defeat. But we've got the bare minimum. We've got 2 wins against shit teams. And look, I've always said it. This is the whole thing. Win 7 out of 8. And when we go to Liverpool, be up there.
Mm.
And we've had a good start. So we're on our way.
Yeah. And I think if the fixtures were reversed, and maybe we'd start against 2 poor teams and we won and we'd lost the last 2, then I might slightly feel different because just the color of the room would be slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you kind of have to look at it as like, yes, we have a lot of growing to do. Like, and again, you had a manager for 22 years and you have a brand new manager who sounds like he's learning to speak English fairly well, which is mm-hmm. pretty good. And you look at that and you have to say, you know, this is what everyone's wished for quite some time, and it's going to take some time. I can't not be somewhat positive about it, because it seems like he has a vision. And
what's the grade, Curtis?
What's
the grade?
It's funny because I'm talking this positive. I'm going to throw out a C.
Ooh, a C.
Because the numbers are where we are. He's a C, but a C is so average. And a C can lead to positive, or we can absolutely fuck off the cliff. But
I said C, yeah, it's different, you know, in the US, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
I guess I'm going to give him a B as well. Yeah. I'm going to give him a B. We've got two wins, which is kind of like where we would have been last year. We're scoring goals. The defense is to the shambles, but I think he inherited that. And he's made a few big decisions that I've been impressed with. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care what anyone says, he dropped Mesut Ozil because he threw a fit about his position, in my opinion. I think that dropping Ramsey after he played poorly in the opening game of the season was great.
Yeah.
And I am excited not to have to look at the same thing every week. And I'd tell you, the most exciting thing about Emery... Yeah, the most exciting thing about Emery for me is I'm now watching the games. And I don't mean that I wasn't watching them before, but you know, like I watch the game with the phone down and I pay a lot closer attention because I could write a match report before and I wouldn't even need to see the game. I'd know exactly what was coming. I'd do that for about 5 years. Now you watch the game because there are so many interesting things happening. Yeah. We're making halftime substitutions. Like he's trying to play
76
out the
minutes.
Back. Yeah. He's transitioning the ball in a different way. Right. And we've got some exciting players that we're hoping to develop. So overall, he's going to get a B. I think there's big tests because the Europa League comes after the international break, I believe. So it's got some long travels there, but overall,
Azerbaijan, yeah.
Azerbaijan, where's it? Ukraine.
Ukraine.
Yeah, that's a Google Maps couldn't even find what they called Quarabag.
That one, yeah.
As
notice, I didn't bother saying that one.
6,000 capacity stadium, so very, very small.
Okay. Which could be really nasty.
Yeah, it would be a fun away game, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You would not.
It's going to be going on there.
Yeah, I certainly do. All right, okay. Thank you for joining us again, Curtis. It's been great having you back.
Thank you for having me back.
Thank you, Matt, as always.
Thanks, Pete.
Brilliant, and we'll catch you soon. Enjoy the pod.
If you love to be remembered as the person who gives the best birthday gifts, I'm here to tell you that 1-800-Flowers.com is your ultimate birthday gifting destination. 1-800-Flowers has thoughtful and artfully created options that are guaranteed to deliver the best birthday surprise. Shop thousands of unique gifts at 1-800-Flowers.com for exclusive offers and great values. To order today, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.